morning, Nova Scotia, and how are you on this sunny Thursday morning, another day closer to the weekend? Hi, and welcome to our show today. It is 9 o'clock right now. I'm Rick Howe with you until 12:30 this afternoon. And here's what we've got coming up on the show for you today. We're going to hear more on the stadium issue this hour. Council voted, as you know, this week to contribute $20 million toward the cost of a stadium, as long as it's not built at Shannon Park. Sean Cleary voted no. He's standing by to tell us more. Then we'll hear from Councillor Stephen Adams. He voted yes. He's also, by the way, on Council's Audit and Finance Committee. And we'll ask him about a request for a $7 million contribution toward a new art gallery on the Halifax waterfront. Schooner Sports and Entertainment's now turning its attention to a stadium contribution from the provincial government. The premier was non-committal when asked about it yesterday. We'll hear later this hour from Schooner Sports and Entertainment's Anthony LeBlanc. He suggested a new hotel levy and a tax on car rentals that might be part of the province's contribution. But after the news at 10, we'll hear from Darlene Grant-Fyander with the Tourism Industry Association of Nova Scotia and her advice to the premier on that issue. No way. It's not everyone in HRM who's had a chance, well, to meet the Pope. Father James Mallon was recently among a group given an audience with the pontiff. And the Halifax priest will join me next hour to tell us about that. We'll hear why a Montague Gold Mines couple wants a new law mandating sellers and realtors to disclose any blasting that might affect properties. Gary Brinton says there's a shocking lack of protection from homeowners when it comes to blasting issues. He'll tell us more about that next hour. A new poll suggests nearly half of Cape Bretoners want to separate from Nova Scotia and become Canada's 11th province, including Russ Green. He's with Nova Scotians for Equalization Fairness. He says the island does not get its fair share of the equalization dollars the province gets from Ottawa. He'll join me with more next hour. Then at 11, we'll find out what's on your mind this morning. We've got another open hour coming up this morning. And, of course, as always, anything goes. And after the news at noon, we'll hear more about a new report suggesting while school enrollments in Nova Scotia have been declining in recent years, per student spending has been rising. And the U.S. House Judiciary Committee is now debating the two articles of impeachment against President Donald Trump, accusing him of abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. We'll discuss the latest with SaintFX political scientist and U.S.-Canada expert Don Abelson this afternoon. But first up this morning, HRM Councillor Sean Cleary. He was one of seven councillors Tuesday who voted no to a $20 million contribution toward a sports stadium, and he joins me on the phone to start off our day here today. Sean, good morning to you.
Good morning, Rick.
How are you doing this morning, sir?
I am pretty gosh darn awesome on a crisp morning like we have now. I'm out walking my dog.
Yeah, it looks like a nice day to be out doing something like that after yesterday's snowfall. It was pretty city coming into the drive into work this morning. You know, it was the full moon, almost a full moon, shone brightly on, again, the snow on the trees. It was a pretty sight all around. So I'm sure you're enjoying your walk here today. But let's talk a little business and explain to us why you voted no to the stadium contribution.
So first, there has never been a demonstrated need for a community stadium. I've looked back through the reports in 2010 and 2014, and it was always predicated on, well, we need to get these events. We need the FIFA Women's World Cup. We need to have CFL. We need, you know, whatever happens to be Canada Games. And especially in recent times, we've had now the Wanderers grounds improved, and, you know, it can seat at least 6,000, perhaps as many as 8,000. We're putting money into Beasley Field and upgrading that, putting a new building in there, new bleachers. We also have, you know, private stadiums like St. Mary's, Wickwire Field at Dow. So I actually tried to move an amendment to the motion, which I might have been able to support had we done it. But this whole notion of us giving money to a so-called community stadium, which is really just a CFL stadium at this point, we would only do it if our staff are in the middle of putting together a field study right now. We've done an arena strategy. We have a strategy on other elements of our recreation programming, but we do not have an official field study. So if that field study, when completed very soon in the next few months, if it says we need a community stadium, then I could see us putting some money into it. But we haven't even actually proven that we need the community stadium yet.
So your amendment was to hold off until the other study comes in?
Yeah.
And I saw a snippet from something, and I'm assuming it's a staff report that suggests that the all-weather fields that we have here in HRM right now are only about 40% utilized. And there was a question
about... that was in that report we got on the CFL stadium. And they are. They're only 40% used, all of our fields.
And the concern was that a stadium would even see less use of the all-weather fields.
Yeah, it could, in fact, reduce our revenue from those other fields by about $50,000 a year. So not only are we potentially giving the CFL stadium $20 million, we may also be giving them, as an opportunity cost, $50,000 a year because we're losing that from our venues, not to mention all of the other venues like St. Mary's Husky Stadium, like Wickwire Field. Those people might lose revenue that'll go into these events, go into the stadium.
But at the same time, if we get a stadium, we'll get a CFL franchise, and that's certainly a feather in our cap, is it not?
Listen, I played football in high school. I made my university football team. I'm a football guy, but the CFL is on the decline. If you look at the attendance numbers over the last two decades, and there are at least three teams now that are very questionable in terms of their financial well-being. So I wouldn't bet the farm on a CFL team.
But it is a league that's 107 years old, and you're right, the three big franchises, Montreal, Toronto, and Vancouver, are struggling. But those other smaller centers, you know, Calgary, Regina, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Hamilton, they're all doing quite well, thank you very much.
Yeah, but if you look at Calgary, for example, they just basically forced their city council to give them a new stadium. So once you're in this game, there's no bottom to this pit. It just continues to grow. And I think, Moshe Lander, who's been quoted as an expert in this field, I think he's Concordia University professor.
Yep.
He has indicated throughout his studies, and also, too, I looked at a Reserve Bank study out of the United States, and they looked at Chicago as an example. So Chicago has six professional sports teams. And the positive economic impact of those six professional sports teams is equivalent to one large shopping mall. That's it.
Yeah. So what's your advice go ahead.
So I was just going to say, in Chicago, if you shut down all six of those professional teams, it would be equivalent to a department store closing. That's it.
So what's your advice to the premier now as Schooner Sports and Entertainment focus its attention on a provincial commitment to this thing?
Well, he's in a bit of a box. He had committed a year ago that there would be no general revenue go towards CFL. And, of course, SSE has proposed a car rental tax and an increase to the hotel levy, which are both in the tourism sector. And the official body for the tourism sector, TIANS, has officially come out against the idea of putting that in because they've also done some analysis and looked at other experiences in other jurisdictions and recognized that the money that is supposed to go, for example, from the hotel levy is to promote more tourism, more hotel nights, for example, because hotels pay a very, very large amount every year, about $1.5 to $2 million into the fund. So, if it's mostly just Haligonians going to a game, I don't see how the hotels get any more business.
We will be talking, by the way, next hour with Darlene Grant Fyander, who is the president of TIANS, the Tourism Industry Association, and we'll get a little more on their opposition. And the mayor mentioned that as well at Tuesday's meeting. And when he talked with us yesterday on the show, that he too has some concerns about this provincial contribution being this levy on hotels and a tax on car rental. So right now, the premier non-committal said yesterday that he won't say one way or the other, only that he's willing to listen to what Schooner Sports and Entertainment has to say. So stay tuned. There's a lot more coming on this one. Before I let you go, Sean, there's a meeting today of Council's Transportation Standing Committee. You've got a couple of motions before this committee, including one that I'm curious to hear more about. You suggest that the staff prepare a report on establishing a new procedure for the appointment of the Halifax Traffic Authority that would include the committee considering candidates and making recommendations to council and may include the recruitment and hiring of new municipal staff for the appointment. Explain this, please.
So under the Motor Vehicle Act, a municipal council can appoint a traffic authority. And so it is a council decision. And the last time council made the decision was actually several years ago, and it was to appoint Bruce Vonnegut, who was then our director of Transportation and Public Works, as our traffic authority. And we had two deputies, Tasso and Roddy. Now, we have not, and our CAO has not brought to us since Bruce Vonnegut left a year and 5 months ago. He has not brought to us a recommendation to replace the traffic authority. So our deputy, Tasso Kouchalakis, is acting in as our traffic authority. And so we have not yet appointed a new traffic authority. And in the past, I've seen the reports that have come through. It's basically just the CAO says, well, here's your manager of traffic or here's your director of transportation, appoint them. But things have changed in Halifax now. So we have a unanimously passed integrated mobility plan. We are putting together a strategic road safety framework. We're moving on what we call our Towards Zero plan, a Vision Zero plan, where we have zero deaths on our roads. And so what we need is a traffic authority that can champion all of those initiatives and bring them forward to council and make the decisions on our roadways. Because this is the other thing. Under the Motor Vehicle Act, once we appoint that traffic authority, they have the final say in what happens on our streets and roads. So, you know, we need someone who's going to uphold the vision of council and not fight council on all of the decisions that we make. So I would like to see, as we do with other appointments, have our committee interview people and make recommendation to council on who that traffic authority should be.
Your other motion calls for a staff report. It says here on developing public-facing policy on boarding of children and staff from schools, daycares, and preschools with input from stakeholders. What are you trying to get at here?
So there have been many complaints over the last number of years, and they probably go back even longer than that, but I've only been on council for 3 years, about school children and preschool children getting on buses and buses driving by them, bus drivers stopping and saying, we can't take all your kids, maybe you can only take some of them. And so these are real issues, and there isn't a public-facing policy. A public-facing policy would be one that we have on our website that is available to people. They can go there and see all of our policies. So we don't have one on that. So there's an internal policy, and it's really just up to the discretion of the driver. But that's not good enough because you're going to get inconsistencies when something is left up to the discretion of the driver. So what I want to see is our transit director come forward with some policy that is then enforced fairly and consistently, no matter where kids are being picked up or, in some cases, denied being picked up.
Okay. And that meeting, Transportation Committee sits down this morning or this afternoon, actually, at 1 o'clock. And just before I let you go, Jim just emailed to say, could you please ask the councillor what happened to the monument of Sir John David Sparrow Thompson, which he says is missing now from his Almond Street location? What do you know about that?
Oh, the plaque. You know what? I don't know. That's not my district. I'll check with Councillor Smith, and I'll also check with, I guess that would be our parks staff, probably. I vaguely recalled seeing or not seeing it, because I go up Almond Street quite regularly. You know what? I don't know. I'll have to check into that.
All right.
I think that was his farm was up there. It was a 10-acre farm or something like that. And I have friends who live up there used to find, as they garden, all kinds of horse teeth and other stuff that was left behind from his estate.
Really? Is that around what location was that at?
Almond in Windsor.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I didn't know
the
that.
The monument was, you know where the used to be the Maritime Lawn and Garden, then it was a gas station before that.
Now
I think it's a rental car place.
Yeah, yeah.
And the monument was like between the house and that commercial space. And so I'll have to go and check and see what's happened to it.
Yeah, I'll have to check and get a little more history on that as well. Wasn't aware that that even existed. All right, Councillor Clare, I appreciate your time here this morning. I'll let you get back to walking your dog on a nice summer, or nice summer, I wish, a nice winter's day.
That's right. Thanks,
Sean. All right, Sean. Take care. Sean Cleary, City Councilor, with us here this Thursday morning. 9:14 is the time right now. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back with more right after this. 9:17. Just before I say hi to my next guest, I got this email just moments ago. It says, good morning, Rick from Mainz, Germany. Now, this is Craig writes to say he fully supports the state, and they're even debating this now. Of course, Craig is from this area, but he's over. I'm not sure if he's posted over there or he's over there on business or pleasure. I'm not sure. But he did write to say he fully supports the stadium, but he's got an interesting idea here. He says, how about locating the forum and the stadium on the old forum site? Keep the old facade, call it the Halifax Forum. He says, get rid of the post office. Ron is gone. The old Piercy site there is gone. Plenty of space, he says, in that block. A new 3,500-seat ice surface below the football field. $110 million already committed. He says it would be a nice facility. And he says public transportation readily available. Bears Road to the 102 and the 103. Roby to the bridge. Interesting idea. And perhaps Anthony LeBlanc, who has said this week he's willing to entertain anybody with a thought about a potential location for a stadium. We'll hear from Anthony LeBlanc coming up later this hour. Right now, though, 9:18, and we just heard from Sean Cleary, the city councilor, who voted no to the staff report suggesting a council contribute a one-time $20 million payment to that stadium issue. On the phone with me now is a councilor who is among the 10 who voted yes. He is Spryfield Area Councilor Stephen Adams. He's on the phone with us this morning. Stephen, good morning to you.
Good morning, Rick.
How you doing this morning, sir?
I'm very well, and you?
I'm all right, thank you very much. Tell us why you voted yes, sir.
A number of reasons. One is it's a defined amount of money that we're contributing. And if you look at, I think one of the fetch-ups that people have is that it's dealing with a private individual. If this was the provincial or federal government coming with $90 or $110 million, $90 million plus our 20, I don't think there'd be as much hesitation. But it's a one-time $20 million investment, which is payable when the stadium's at substantial completion. And I don't look at it as a football stadium. It is a stadium, period. If we're going to run this solely on the CFL, that would not work. Not at all. But because it's a stadium for all, and our CAO is going to be looking at negotiating some programming at the stadium, then I think it's good for the city.
So what do you say to those who have argued that there are other priorities? We have other projects, other more necessary projects, other projects that are more of a need here than a stadium. What do you say to them?
Well, I asked Jacques Dubé in open council, will this have any impact on other projects that we have? And he said, no, it's not going to make a difference. And I heard councilor yesterday suggesting that, well, it'll be a problem for future projects. Sure will, but we don't know what those projects are. So this is not going to impact negatively anything that we have planned now. I also heard people saying we've got, people can't find a doctor. We need hospitals. We need schools. We need healthcare. All true, but affordable housing as well. All true, but this stadium being built or not being built will have no impact whatsoever on whether those particular projects go through or not.
Yeah, part of the condition as well of the council vote is that the stadium not be located at Deshannon Park. Any idea come to mind, Stephen? Do you have any preference as to what do you think might be the best location for a stadium?
Well, first on the Shannon Park, that was a terrible location. I've joked that's where my failed NHL career got its start. 40 cars leaving Shannon Park after a hockey game was a traffic jam. So I can't imagine what would happen if there's more than that. I would like to see something that is has access to the major highways and more than one way out, I think is the best way to put it. One other point too on the stadium, Rick, that they're going to be paying property tax. There's no tax breaks for them, so the $20 million we will get some or all of it back.
All right, but what about again this report that is coming to council? But we got a bit of a snippet of what it says in regards to the use of our sports field and such, and the all-weather fields that we have. This report suggesting right now they're only about 40% utilized, and the stadium will have an impact on that, and it'll mean less revenue generated for the city from these sports fields.
Well, I haven't seen the report. I'll take a look at it when we get it. But I dare say that the Atlanta Schooners aren't going to be playing on one of our all-weather fields. Some of the concerts that may come or any other large events that come aren't going to be using those particular fields. But again, it's hard to comment until I see the report.
Sure enough. 9:23 is the time. City Councilor Stephen Adams on the line with us. You're a member of the Audit and Finance Committee as well, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Yes.
And, I'm not sure if you're aware or not yet, but the committee will be asked for a debate on a contribution toward a new art gallery in downtown on the Halifax waterfront. This is a provincial proposal. The province is looking to kick in some $66 million. The feds have said they'll contribute $30 million. The art gallery itself has to raise $30 million, and it's asking now the city, HRM, for a $7 million contribution toward this new art gallery. Stephen, what are your thoughts on that?
No.
End of discussion?
Yeah, I try to make sure there's no room for misinterpretation.
Well, I think we got it quite clear. Maybe you can explain why you're opposed to that.
Well, when this was first announced, you know, it appeared that the federal and provincial governments were going to fund this. And, you know, people lost their minds over it. You probably figured out I'm not an arts or cultural kind of fellow. But that aside, you know, if the art gallery wants to do this and they've got their, you know, this is something that was announced and now they're trying to fundraise, it should have been done the other way around. Similar to what's happening with the stadium. I know some people will say, well, what's the difference? Well, the difference is, you know, the stadium component has started and they're working on funding, whereas the other way they're trying to get funding after the announcement.
Well, again, the request is coming. I'm not sure when your committee meets next, Stephen, but that's a request that you'll be asked to consider and debate and fire off a staff report to the full body of council. But the bottom line right now is that the city is being asked for about a $7 million contribution. I mean, this gallery, I think Sam Austin, you know, suggested this would be clearly a great addition to the Halifax waterfront. But now I guess, you know, how much money do we have out there to be dishing out to this project and that project and all of these stuff?
It would be a great addition, but you know, we're starting to. I like to stick with our mandate. Recreation's our mandate. Art galleries, I don't know if they are. I don't think they are. You know, we talked the other day about a splash pad for the Commons plus some other amenities with regard to water. You know, fun with water, I guess you could say. And you know, that's $15 to $17 million. People didn't blink an eye. And that's not something that can be used as much as a stadium can be used, but it is within our mandate.
All right. Councillor, appreciate your time as always. Thank you, Stephen.
Anytime, Rick. You have yourself a good weekend.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye. City Councillor Stephen Adams with us here on a Thursday morning. Well, we heard again from the two sides at the council debate on Tuesday. And now, again, the focus of attention for Schooner Sports and Entertainment, anyway, is on the provincial government. The premier was asked about a contribution toward the stadium cost yesterday. He wouldn't commit one way or the other. He would only say he will listen to what Schooner Sports and Entertainment has to say. And we'll hear what Schooner Sports and Entertainment has to say coming up after the news. Anthony LeBlanc will join us with more. We'll hear his reaction to a council's decision, what he'd like to see from the province, and, well, some of the reaction to that suggestion, especially from the Tourism Industry Association of Nova Scotia, that's suggesting there should be no way that the province should tack on an extra levy on hotel rooms and a tax on car rentals to help pay for this stadium. Darlene Grant Fyander from Tie-Ins will join me coming up after the news at 10 o'clock. 9:26 is the time right now. David just emailed in regard to the question that Jim had about that monument of Sir John David Sparrow Thompson, which at one time was located on Almond Street. Anyway, Dave writes to say the plaque on Almond Street was on the property just behind the discount car rentals. The plaque has been missing for many months. He says, I drive by there often and I noticed it missing. That small lot is now home to about 10 to 15 parked rental vehicles. My guess, he writes, is that a developer owns that old gas station and the lot in question. And as often happens, the developers hope that time will erase memory and they can get the permission to make some millions for themselves. He writes, I bet that a good reporter with some digging would find a pretty interesting story there, writes David here this morning. I wasn't aware that there was a plaque there even, and perhaps we'll see if we can dig up a little more on the history of the individual honored by the plaque, Sir John David Sparrow Thompson. Coming up now to 9:28, we're going to break here. We've got a news update for you in just a couple of moments. After the news, a conversation with Anthony LeBlanc with Schooner Sports and Entertainment. The news is next, and we'll be back right after that. (Music) 9:32 here on a sunny, good-looking Thursday morning, actually. Hope your day is going well so far. Coming up later this half hour, we'll hear from Annette Armitage. She's with the Halifax Animal Rescue Coalition. We'll hear more about this puppy mill. SPCA officers seized some 35 dogs from this puppy mill in the Annapolis Valley this week. And a report on CTV News last night suggested that puppy mills are not that common here in Nova Scotia. I beg to differ with that, and I think Annette will as well, and she'll tell us more about puppy mills when she joins me coming up in about 10, 12 minutes or so. After the news at 10, Darlene Grant Fyanders with the Tourism Industry Association of Nova Scotia. She's got a message for the Premier of Nova Scotia here this morning. No way, she says, should this province offer schooner sports and entertainment any kind of break as regards to a tax on car rentals or a special levy on hotel rooms as a means of the provincial contribution toward a possible stadium here. We'll hear more from Darlene Grant Fyander coming up after the news at 10 this morning. We've got an open hour for you between 11 and 12. And over the noon hour today, Alex Whalen with the Fraser Institute will tell us about a new study that's out that suggests that over the last 5 years, student enrollments have been declining here in Nova Scotia. But per student spending is up, way up, and he'll tell us more about that report when he joins me coming up this afternoon. 9:33 is the time right now. Well, we're going to hear again now from Anthony LeBlanc. He is with Schooner Sports and Entertainment. They are the folks that are, of course, pitching government levels here in Nova Scotia for help toward the cost of a stadium. This week, the City Council approved a $20 million one-time payment, but with the condition that the stadium not be built at Shannon Park. And now his attention turns to the province and what he says is necessary contribution from the province in order for this thing to go ahead. And Anthony LeBlanc is on the phone with us this morning. Good morning, Anthony.
Good morning, Rick.
How are you doing this morning, sir?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing all right. Thank you very much. I guess my first question is, now that the council is giving you that $20 million with conditions, they want you not to build it at Shannon Park. I know it's only been a couple of days since that decision, but, you know, what can you tell us in regards to potential other locations right now? Did you have a plan B on your list?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that, you know, we went through this process always looking at a number of different sites, and candidly, Shannon Park was always our preference. But we understood, as does Canada Lands, that there were some issues associated with that site, and particularly the ones that were highlighted by staff in the report. The the access isn't perfect, and you know, current transit is not acceptable, and so those are the reasons why, you know, they've made the decision that they have. But, you know, we've been very, very open over the last number of months, the other sites that we've been talking to. So, you know, we got a heads up on this just over a week prior that this was going to be a recommendation. So, you know, we reached out to the folks that we have talked to in the past. And obviously when this became, public, when the report was released last Friday, my phone and my associates' phones lit up with people that feel that they have a site that could be amenable. So, you know, we're going to go through this process. I think it's a very quick one because of the fact that we've done the analysis. We know what other sites work. And remember, there's a real key change here, Rick, with the fact that HRM has moved away from this model of a TIF, tax increment financing, which would have been reliant on a certain development happening immediately in and around the stadium. With that being taken away, it really does change our decision tree in how we're looking at this. So, you know, other sites that have been discussed, you know, Bayers Lake, Dartmouth Crossing, the exhibition grounds, even the airport, and then recently people have mentioned the idea of the Woodside Lands. That one's a little trickier because it just sold from the province. But all of those, I think, tick the boxes, and we're going to go through this process over the next series of weeks. But I don't think we'll stretch, you know, into February without having a site selected.
Yeah, but you didn't have a second preference then after Shannon Park yourself personally.
Not personally. I think all of the sites that I've indicated have their benefits. I mean, you know, starting with the airport. I mean, sure, it's a farther drive for people from HRM, but it's a great location if you're coming in from other parts of the region. Dartmouth Crossing, of course, has great access. It has, you know, the facilities that you need for these types of stadiums with hotels and restaurants. And Bayers Lake, I personally quite like the opportunity there. So I think all of these sites, as I said, they tick, you know, various boxes, but we'll go through a process. And of course, the difference now is HRM will be at the table with us to ensure that, you know, their conditions are met with this selection.
Now you turn your attention to the province. And did I hear you say correctly with Steve Murphy the other night that's an absolute necessity? There has to be provincial participation in this, or this is a dead deal, basically.
Yeah, and Rick, I think I've been pretty open about that throughout this process, that these facilities do not get built without public involvement. I mean, you can look across the CFL, you can look across North America at arenas and stadiums, and these all have some level of public involvement. But if you look at, you know, the and I think that CAO Jacques Dubé did a nice job of highlighting the differences, in particular for HRM compared to other municipalities. I mean, it's a fraction. It's an absolute fraction of what is being paid by HRM compared to their cousins across the country. And of course, the big difference is the fact that they have the private sector at the table that will take on the operational risk. So I think it's fair to say, and this was certainly echoed by, you know, certainly the members of council that supported the motion, that this, you know, they drove a hard bargain. They did a nice job. And now the province, and I know you have Darlene coming on at the top of the hour, and I had the pleasure of meeting with Darlene and members of her executive team, or her board, sorry, a few weeks ago. And we had a really good, spirited discussion. And I think it's important for people to understand that, you know, some of the concepts that have been thrown out there for provincial involvement, call it hotel tax increases or car rental taxes, those are just concepts. You know, certainly the premier has clearly stated he is not in favor or opposed to anything. And now that, you know, the model with HRM has changed, I think it opens up some interesting opportunities for how we can work with the province.
But outside of that levy on hotel rooms and a tax on car rentals, what other ideas might you be proposing here?
Well, I mean, I think that there's ways that you can look at this that other jurisdictions have come to the table. I don't want to sit here and you know, I think it's more important that I have these discussions with the province first. But it's fair to say, Rick, that there are other models that make sense. Now, having that said, and as I discussed with Darlene and her board, you know, this model that we have explained is pretty common across other jurisdictions, you know, but I certainly understand their consternation with the whole process and you know, why they are opposed to it. They certainly enlightened me with their views, and I'm sure that Darlene will do the same with your listeners here shortly. So we understand that. So we're going into this, and, you know, I was very encouraged to hear the premier yesterday say, you know, he's wide open, he's listening, he wants to see if this makes sense, and it was also very clear that he's a strong believer in the CFL and a strong believer and the fact that a stadium is a good thing for a city the size of Halifax. But, you know, now we go into a consultative mode and try to figure out a plan that makes sense for everybody.
Are you still going to, or will you be asking the province to guarantee a loan that your group is going to have to take out to fund the stadium here, unless you've got a secret treasure buried some way? I don't see how you're going to go about doing this. How are you going to get a loan without a co-signer? And does that co-signer have to be the provincial government?
Well, I think what we'd be looking for from the province is very similar to what we're, you know, ultimately going to receive from HRM. What will come from HRM is what's referred to in public policy as a covenant. And that covenant will be very clear and binding that, you know, HRM will be contributing $20 million upon substantial completion of the stadium. We'd be looking for similar types of covenants from the province. So, you know, guarantee is probably the wrong word, but it's probably no different than what we're looking for from HRM, which I guess at the end of the day, you could say is a guarantee, but it is, you know, based off conditions. So we'd be looking for similar types of arrangements.
But, I mean, if the province says, okay, we've got some land perhaps we can give you, or maybe we'll put that tax on car rentals and the levy on hotel rooms, but we're not going to co-sign any kind of loan, how difficult does that make this project?
You know, the one thing I could say to you, Rick, is if you look at what we've done over the last year, I think you could say a lot of things about our group if you're opposed or against, but I think it's fair to say that we're consultative and we're nimble. And what we have done is we've adapted the plan as necessary. Now, what are the levels that this plan could be adapted? I don't know. But if you look at where we started with HRM and where we ended, they're pretty much ways apart. So I don't know how much room we have left. I don't know where the province's head is at. I think that the premier summed it up perfectly. He, you know, he hasn't really given it his full attention at this point. And now he's, you know, we've gotten past the hurdle of HRM. And now it's time for us to sit down with the premier and his colleagues and see where their heads are at. So I'm not going to sit here and, you know, pre-negotiate what this would look like. But again, I think it's important for everyone to understand that we certainly have adapted, and I think we'll continue to do so. And hopefully we'll get to a point that makes sense.
Indeed. 9:42, before I let you go, Scott just emailed asking a question that I'm hearing getting a lot of requests, people wondering this very question. He says, Scott says, please ask him, how much money are you going to bring to the table exactly, or are three levels of government supposed to be putting in 100% of what you need? Can you answer that?
Absolutely. So we have stated today that we will be contributing $1 million a year towards what we're referring to as an occupancy cost on a 30-year term. So that's $30 million towards the capital cost of the building. That's bucket A. Bucket B is we have signed up for doing all of the CapEx, the capital expenditures that this facility will have moving forward. So we have pledged that we, out of our own pockets, will be contributing an additional $500,000 a year towards a sinking fund for CapEx. And then lastly, and most importantly, we are the group that are going to operate this facility. These facilities cost a lot of money to keep the lights on and to take the snow away and to, you know, just keep them operating. We're budgeting $3 to $4 million a year. That will all be on us, which, by the way, and I believe you said his name is Scott. Scott, it's important for you to understand that all the other facilities in HRM that are operated by the municipality, they do not have a private sector partner that is there doing that. So the ForPad, the Forum, all of those things are operated at the sole expense of HRM. Complete difference with this model. So and when you mush all of that together, we will by far be the largest contributor financially to the facility.
And do you want, is there a time frame still here, or are you just kind of go with the flow?
I've learned one lesson: stop with the time frames. We'll get it. It'll get done when it gets done. That's what my friends at the Ottawa Red Blacks told me.
Well, listen, I appreciate your time as always, Anthony LeBlanc, your availability, whatever we have asked for you to come on the air, you have agreed to do so. And for that, I say thank you very much. And I'm sure we'll talk again, sir.
Yes, I'm sure we will. Thanks so much for the time, Rick.
Have a great day. Take care. Bye-bye. Anthony LeBlanc with Scooter Sports and Entertainment. And Daryl's got given us a call with a point or a question here this morning. Hi, Daryl.
Just a quick question. If it's possibly the province of Nova Scotia putting the money in, and definitely the HRM putting the money in, why is this team called the Atlantic Schooners? Are the other provinces putting any money or any kind of resources into this team?
That's a good question.
That's going to represent Halifax, not, you know, the Atlantic provinces.
Well, I think they're calling it the Atlantic Schooners, even though they're going to play out of Halifax. That they want this to be a regional team. They're hoping that it'll draw fans from, you know, from Sydney, from Charlottetown, from St. John, from Moncton, from around the region. And I think that's why they're calling it the Atlantic Schooners.
Okay, are they going to put any money into this venture?
Well, I don't know about Moncton. Moncton may be a participant to some extent, but I doubt that. Daryl, this would be almost an exclusively HRM / provincial Nova Scotia government issue here.
I'm a big fan of the stadium. I think we need it for the city to progress and to become a city as opposed to a small city. But I think this calling it the Atlantic Schooners is just pandering. And if we're trying to boost Halifax and trying to boost this area, calling a team the Atlantic Schooners is not going to do it. So if they're calling it the Atlantic Schooners, I don't know if I'm going to support it. If they're going to call it the Halifax Schooners, we're good to go. Otherwise, the other provinces and other municipalities have to start kicking in some money. And I think that's a valid point.
Appreciate the call. All right, thank you. 9:45 is the time. The Premier, by the way, said in a quote here, "I think it would be irresponsible for me to say no. We have a Canadian league looking at our city, our province, and we need to look at this from all sides. And is there a way for the province to participate?" So he's not saying yes, he's not saying no, but he is interested and says he was willing to listen to what Schooner Sports and Entertainment has to say. 9:46 is our time. Perhaps you'll hear your thoughts again, continuing this debate when we open up the phone lines at 11 this morning for another open hour where, of course, as always, anything goes. 9:46, we'll be back with more right after this. Coming up now to 9:49 and a few tweets to say $30 million over 30 years is not the same as $30 million up front. We want to see hard cash, writes Peter here this morning. He also tweets to say, "I think if the province entertains this con job, we need to look at electing a different government. Enough of foolish spending. The province needs to spend on healthcare, not football fields." And Chad tweets to say he knows the difference between a stadium and an art gallery. "We already have an art gallery," he writes in big, bold letters. Of course, that's his reaction to the $7 million request from the art gallery to the city, a contribution it wants from HRM toward the cost of a new art gallery on the Halifax waterfront. And perhaps we'll hear your thoughts on that coming up between 11 and 12 this morning, an open hour between 11 and 12. And as always in our open hours, anything goes. 9:49 right now. Well, a CTV report last night on the SPCA's decision this week to seize 35 dogs from an Annapolis Valley puppy mill suggested that puppy mills are not common here in Nova Scotia. Well, I'm not so sure how accurate a statement that was, and perhaps someone with a better knowledge of puppy mills joins me on the phone to tell us more about this this morning. She is Annette Armitage, and she's with the Halifax Animal Rescue Coalition. Annette, good morning to you.
Good morning, Rick.
How are you today?
Well, we're not doing too bad.
Good. Glad to hear. Our puppy, I mean, I thought they were fairly common here in this province.
I'm not going to call anyone names, but they are very common in outlying areas of the cities. Like if you take what happened in Wolfville, then there was yesterday a seizure of 53 in...
Campbellton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they are... See, they don't have to be registered. And the one that was done by the Nova Scotia SPCA was a registered breeder. Now, that's not to say I respect all good registered breeders. There are some fantastic ones out there. But there are also ones that are just mass-producing animals as a business model. They're a commodity, and it's minimum cost and gives them more revenue, and it, you know, the dogs are harmed.
Yeah, but in this case, the SPCA was made aware of this by a tip from the public back in September, I understand, and went through a number of compliance orders first before they decided to act. And I just wonder, you know, here it is, the middle of December now, and so that was quite a time, September, October, November, and now in December. Did they wait too long here, do you think?
Well, of course I'm going to say yes, but I'm sure they have protocols in place and guidelines they have to follow. You go in, and if there is an adequate food and water, then, you know, they go back and double check it. If there isn't, if there's dogs that aren't cared for or vetted properly, they're given so much time. If, you know, there is an immediate danger, but with puppy mills, you know, a lot of it can be inbreeding, and genetics produce diseases, abnormalities, and it's just not cool. But as for the timeline, I haven't read, I don't have the handbook that they would have to follow, because like in any criminal case, seizure, anything that's going to go through the courts, there is a procedure you would have to follow.
Yeah. Do pet stores, do they sell dogs from puppy mills?
No, we're not allowed here in Canada anymore.
Not anymore. When did that take effect?
That was back, I'm going to say 10-plus years.
Yeah.
Like, that's been quite some time. But they don't need it now with Kijiji, social media, all the factors there. I mean, you know, there's access, and, you know, if they pass themselves off as a breeder and meet you in a parking lot and you never see the parents, I mean, these are all very serious signs.
I got an email here from Tracy who writes that she was heartbroken to hear the news about the puppy mill seizure and says her yellow lab was a breeding dog from a puppy mill outside Digby 3 years ago, and says her nails were so long she had trouble walking. So, I mean, these puppy mills, you know, they don't treat their animals as they should, do they?
Well, they're often kept in crowded, filthy barn sheds, basements. Some of them are wire crates stacked on top of each other. Therefore, the dog's legs can go through. And the top one, their feces drop down through the crates to the bottom one. So it's just horrific. The dogs are not vetted. You know, I'm not saying they have to go to a groomer every 6 months or whatever, but, you know, these dogs are just there to produce puppies. And when they reach, I think it's six, they are no longer needed. And
what do they do with them then?
I don't have anything in writing, but once the product is no longer useful, I can't imagine they keep it.
Yeah. These dogs, these 35 dogs, again, Jack Russell Terriers and Border Collies, I understand. It says here that SPCA described them as timid, anxious, and very fearful of humans, which suggests they had little contact with people. How could that be?
Well, with puppy mills, that is what they are. They're, you know, out in a barn or a garage or in these crates. They don't see humans. They don't get socialized. You know, so, and the two breeds you're speaking of are fairly high in intelligence. They need motivation. They need, you know, of all the breeds, these ones would be shut down because they need interaction. They need a job. Like every dog should have a companion. You know, if and a good breeder, you know, the people who want to adopt come in, they meet the parents, it's in a home setting. You know, these are commercial entities that really don't care about the product.
Yeah. You mentioned the seizure in New Brunswick as well. This happened this week, too, near Campbellton. Some 50 dogs that were seized by the SPCA. Breeds included Bulldogs, Yorkshire Terriers, Poodles, Australian Shepherds, Schnauzers, Maltese, Pugs, and Boston Terrier dogs. Some puppies included in that mix as well. But again, my question, Ed, as I led off the chat here, Annette, is how widespread are these puppy mills?
They're very widespread. You know, there's no, under our regulations, there's nothing that says they're illegal.
So what does the province need to do, or what does do municipalities have a say in this at all? What needs to be done? What kind of legislation is required here to try to shut these places down?
Well, I don't want to put a limit on dog ownership because many people have, like myself, I have three dogs. But when you're up in the 50s, you know, that should tell you something right there. Like, as a pet owner, how could I afford to vet, feed, and care for 50-some animals? You just can't. You know, just your annual vaccines. So those that are looking to get a puppy, if the case you mentioned with the 53, if one breeder sells that many breeds, that's an indication they're a miller. You know, because a good breeder normally focuses on one, maybe two.
Yeah, and I've got a couple emails as we chat here this morning, Annette, both wondering why the SPCA took so long to shut down these dogs and to rescue what this person calls these poor defenseless dogs. And again, that's something that a number of people are quite concerned about, that the fact that it took them a number of months before they actually seized these animals.
And I agree with them, but that is something that I believe you'd have to speak to the SPCA about because,
sure.
As I said, you know, they're the only legislative body. You know, us individuals, citizens, would want those dogs removed immediately. You know, if they're in as bad shape as the pictures indicated and people are saying, then yes, I don't know why it wasn't dealt with sooner, but I don't know enough about their procedures.
Sure. And we also, as she also points out, one of the emailers says that people need to stand up and stop buying puppies from these puppy mills, and that would certainly go toward making things difficult for them as well.
That is very true, and so we're back to do your research. You know, get references from people. Make sure you go see the mom and dad. See where the puppy is brought up. You know, get your vet records, you know, before you even hand over any money, because they should be on the premises with the animals. These are all things that we've discussed regarding rescue and adoption, but the same thing applies here. So if you're going to go to a breeder, a good, reputable breeder will supply oodles of references.
Indeed. Good advice. As always, Annette, appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you for keeping this in the news.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Annette Armitage with the Halifax Animal Rescue Coalition. 2 minutes now before 10 o'clock. We've got a news update coming up for you at the top of the hour. Lots still ahead here on this Thursday morning. Stay with us. We'll be back right after the news, and the news is coming up next.